Sustainable Home Catalyst, Episode 4, Environmentally Sustainable Homes. Welcome to Sustainable Home Catalyst. I'm your host, Ben Hildebrandt, and if you want to learn how you can make your home more sustainable for you, your finances, and the environment, you've come to the right place. My goal is to help improve the quality and sustainability of new and existing homes in North America so that everyone can improve their quality of life and have a home that is more comfortable, healthy, and sustainable. This is episode 4, and in today's episode, we're going to discuss the basics of environmentally sustainable homes. You can find the show notes at shcatalyst.com/004. So in this episode, we're going to discuss four main points. We're going to discuss what makes homes or the materials used in them damaging to the environment. We're going to discuss how you can know if materials used in your home are environmentally friendly. Also, how you can reduce energy use in your home, and as to the point of this episode, what you want to come away with. Finally, we're going to discuss how you can make your home more environmentally friendly. So how can your home be damaging to the environment? First is through energy consumption, or the energy your home uses, because in many parts of North America, or around the world for that matter, energy is produced by burning fossil fuels, which creates emissions and often depletes a non-renewable resource. So when you're considering your energy consumption, an important thing to consider that not many people know about is source versus site energy use as it applies to electricity. So the source energy is the energy that goes into the production of power at power plants or whatever the source is. It's putting power into the grid. So whether you're burning coal or natural gas, or if you're looking at the... In terms of renewable resources, you're looking at energy from the sun. So the source energy, like that's an infinite supply. We're not concerned too much about that. Or hydroelectricity, the energy of water flowing through a dam. That's also, that energy is kind of a renewable as well. Some people would debate the impact that might have on fish stock and everything, but that's besides the point of this episode. I'll try not to get too sidetracked. So we're looking at source energy, particularly as it goes to burning fossil fuels to create the energy, we have the amount of energy that's in, let's take coal for example, that's in that original coal. So you're going to have a lot of heat losses in the combustion process, and you could feel that if you're walking too close around a power plant, which no one usually does. And also there's inefficiencies as well, often in different materials that are burned for producing energy. You'll have the exhaust or the smoke that comes off, and there's still some of that, some particulates in that material that could have been burned if they may have used a more efficient process. So you have energy losses and heat losses through the combustion process, and then you have a lot of energy losses as that electricity travels through the power lines from the power plant to your home. And additionally, every time that the utility steps up the voltage or steps down the voltage through a transformer, you have some energy loss through there. So all along the way of production of energy, you have different losses along there. And then finally, we get to site energy. So that's the actual energy that you are consuming in your home through turning on your TV or turning on a light bulb. That's your site energy. If you compare the amount of energy that goes in at the source to the amount of energy you're using at your home, it varies depending on where you are and what the source of electricity is, or how the utility is generating the electricity. But often the source energy can be two or three times as much as, or sometimes more, as the energy you're actually using in your home. So that's something to take into consider when you're considering your electricity usage in your home, is the source versus site energy. And if you're looking into natural gas or other types of energy you use in your home, you look at energy used through the delivery of those things as well. You can consider source versus site energy slightly in that way as well. So how does your home use energy, whether it be through gas, electricity, or other sources? Energy, we all know, we use a lot during the use of our home, whether it's for heating or using appliances or for lighting. But there's also energy use from harvesting and manufacturing materials, or producing the materials, get them to the state that they can be installed and constructed as your home. And also, finally, when you're done using something, there's the energy use that's needed to recycle or dispose of old materials. So that's the basics. When it comes to damaging the environment, we look at our energy consumption, how much energy we're using, whether it be right using in our homes, and how much energy is used in producing the materials that goes into our homes, and also at the end of the material's life to recycle or dispose of it. So the energy consumption, especially when we're talking about energy that comes from non-renewable resources such as fossil fuels, and also that might emit carbon into the atmosphere, those are things to take into account in terms of environmental sustainability. So another item to consider is depletion of natural resources. So think about the materials that go into your home. Are they renewable materials? And what does it take to manufacture them? So think about concrete, wood, glass, metals, plastics, paints. Those are many different materials, and they have many different construction processes, manufacturing processes, the things it takes to produce them and get them to a state where they can be installed in your home or used in your home. So what natural materials are used in producing those different items in your home? Consider that. Also consider the damage to natural habitats. So whether it be habitats where you build your home, habitats being destroyed by the construction materials that are being harvested, or the ingredients that you need to make the different that are needed to make the different materials that go into your home. Also, emission pollution. What are the byproducts of what's going into your home, and how does that affect habitats around the world? And then also, finally, what about the harmful waste from the construction of your home, or at the end of the life of the materials in your home when you need to dispose of them, when you do renovations? What's being tossed out? And if that's just going to the landfill, how is that affecting natural habitats? So those are three basic things to consider about how your home can be damaging to the environment: your energy consumption, depleting natural resources, and affecting natural habitats adversely, damaging them. So next, how do you determine if a material is environmentally friendly? First off, you want to think of the source of the materials. Is it a sustainable source? Does it destroy natural habitats? Is it a finite resource that's being used, or is it renewable? Is it like forests of trees that can be replanted and regrown? So it's sometimes you have different timelines that it takes to regenerate what's being used, but is it something that is renewable, or is it a non-renewable resource? And one organization that's out there that I think is really cool is the Forest Stewardship Council, so FSC. And you can see these stamps on wood products that you use, particularly lumber you buy from your hardware store. And that stamp verifies that during the production of that lumber, that wood material, they're using sustainable forest harvesting practices. And there are a lot of other organizations out there as well that kind of certify the way materials are produced, certify that they're being done in a very sustainable and environmentally friendly way, or as environmentally friendly as currently possible with our technologies. So FSC, the Forest Stewardship Council, you can see that on wood and paper products. Basically, anything that comes from a tree, if they're using sustainable practices, they can have an FSC stamp or logo on their packaging or on the material itself. And there are a lot of other organizations out there to certify different types of materials too, but I'm not going to get into that much in this episode. So source materials, is it sustainable? Consider that when you want to know if something's environmentally friendly. Also consider how much energy does it take to manufacture the material or to maintain it through the life of the material. And also what about the energy use at the end of the life of that material, we need to dispose of it or recycle of it. Now, this can be analyzed in what's known as a life cycle assessment. And I'm just going to give you a brief overview of it, because I think that's an amazing tool that's getting more and more use in the past couple of decades when people want to know how much energy is going into the buildings that they're using. Now, I've got a link in the show notes to the Wikipedia definition of life cycle assessment, which gives a pretty good overview and dives a little bit deeper into it. But a life cycle assessment can be completed to assess all the energy a product uses from its harvesting and manufacture through its useful life, and then finally the energy it takes to dispose of or recycle of it. So another way this is referred to is as cradle to grave energy use. Now, this gives a really good insight into the amount of energy a product uses before and after it serves you in your home, as well as how much it may use or allow you to save while it is in your home. A couple main terms that are used in a life cycle assessment are, first, embodied energy. Now, this is the energy that's already used, that already goes into the product when it through manufacturing and producing it and getting it into your home. So when you once that material is installed in your home and you haven't used it yet, the embodied energy is all the energy that's been used in getting the material to that point. And then the next main point is the type of energy that's considered is the usage energy. So this is the energy that's consumed by a product during its use, or in terms of homes, often it's considered how much energy it allows you to save through using it in your home. So a lot of times in homes, they look at doing a life cycle assessment on the home as a whole. They look at all the materials that went into the home, all the embodied energy of those materials, and then the energy usage of that home for the life of the home. And then they look at the energy use that's going to be required to tear down the home. So it's really interesting to look at life cycle assessments and the impact they have. And one thing to consider when you look at life cycle assessments and embodied energy and energy usage and such of materials is that some products take much more energy to produce than other less processed products. So you may end up deciding between an energy-intense product or an alternate, less processed product that may have a lower life cycle energy use, but also has a more negative impact on natural resources than the energy-intense product. So keep in mind that sometimes you need to decide between different environmental priorities, and in that case, do what you're comfortable with and what's in tune with your goals towards having a more sustainable home. Other things to consider when determining if a material is environmentally friendly, whether there are harmful chemicals such as formaldehyde in the material. Secondly, is the material designed to minimize waste during manufacturing and construction? And finally, is the waste recyclable? What's going to happen at the end of life with the materials you're using? So next, let's discuss ways you can reduce energy use in your home. And firstly, what are things when you're looking at constructing a new home? You want to consider, firstly, adding extra insulation and reducing the number of windows and doors, which will reduce your energy loss or your energy requirements during the life of your home. That's known as a passive solution. It's constructed into your home and there's no maintenance, and you do that work up front and it's there. So consider adding extra insulation and reducing the number of windows and doors, which essentially, or reduce the size of them as well, which windows and doors are essentially a hole in the insulation thermally. And when you're considering energy usage. Then secondly, place windows strategically so that you're minimizing heat loss and maximizing heat gain depending on the season and climate. And also with your windows, you want to place them to maximize the natural light in your home and thus reduce your need for electrical lighting. Now, I need to go on a bit of a rant here for large volume home builders around where you go, you pick a house plan, you pick a lot. They aren't optimizing homes for the orientation. I see lots of homes around Calgary with large, huge expanses of windows on the north side of the home, which are never going to see direct sunlight. They're never going to gain heat from the sun, except maybe a short period of the summer. But then there's all that energy lost through those large windows versus if it was just a wall there. And then also, see large windows on the south side of the home without any shading. So in the summertime, that results in really, really hot rooms. Now, these home builders, they only have so many plans. And when you go to buy a new home, you pick a plan, you pick a lot in the neighborhood, and you pay them, and then they build your home. And there's no thought, often on the homeowner's part, but particularly not on the builder's part, to the orientation of the home and solar heat loss or heat gain due to the design of the home with the location of the windows. So I have a challenge for home builders. I want you to design a set of homes that are optimized for certain orientation. So if your plot faces a north street, the front of the house is facing a north street and it has a south backyard, have a design maximized for that. Small windows on the north, large windows on the south, and have some overhangs to shade those windows in the summertime. Now, if the plot faces east to west, don't have the eating area in front of large west windows that will blast the occupants with the hot evening sun during dinner. Just consider that. Now, whether you're designing specific plans for each orientation or you have different versions of the same plan depending on the plot orientation, just do it. It's not that hard. I know how to design homes. I went to school for it. Sure, it takes a bit of time up front, but you, Mr. Home Builder, you're spending time to design one plan. You're building that same plan 50, 100, or sometimes 1,000 times. So it's just a little bit of work that goes up front. So do it. It's not that hard. And by designing homes that are optimized for the orientation, you can make a huge difference to the energy usage, and also particularly in colder climates or really warm climates where sun going through windows makes a big impact to the thermal comfort, you can make a huge difference on the occupant comfort within your home. That's a simple thing you can do. In my opinion, that's what you need to do, Mr. Home Builder out there. So that's the end of my rant. That's something that, if you can't tell, really, really peeves me a bit. It's a huge waste of energy. And there are a lot of brand new homes that are being built that are really uncomfortable because they're not optimized. They're not designed to be optimized for their orientation. So if you're a builder, or if you know of one that already has sets of house plans that are optimized for orientation, leave a comment at the bottom of the show notes at shcatalyst.com/004 and tell me about it. I have not seen this being done anywhere except for a few custom houses where they're designed for this specific large fancy lot wherever. But I think this should be done everywhere, in every house. Every home should be designed so that it's optimized for its orientation, the way it's being placed, so you're not losing extra energy and you're not gaining extra heat at unoptimal, is that a term? At bad times of the year, you don't want to be wasting energy. And you don't want to have an uncomfortable home with hot spots in the summer and cold spots in the winter. And this is something that can be designed into a home, and it's easy to do. Doesn't really affect the construction cost based on, except for size and number of windows and such. But it has a minimal impact on the cost of building a home, but it can have a great impact on the energy use during a home. And this should be done everywhere. Every home should be optimized, designed to be optimized for its orientation. So also, if you want to reduce energy use in your home, it's great to consider renewable resources of heat or electricity. But first, look at how you can reduce the energy you will need in the first place. The energy your home will need in the first place. Consider how you can reduce that. And this is much more cost effective than looking to produce that energy through renewables, such as solar electric or solar thermal panels. Now, these are all great things to take into account when you're building a new home or looking at having a new home built for you, or you're doing a major renovation. But what are some things that you can do with your existing home to reduce energy usage? Well, let's discuss a few. With an existing home, you can look at replacing your existing lighting or appliances. Now, with this, you want to look at what you use the most and see how you can improve it. It's not really worth the cost to replace an old incandescent light bulb that you only use for a few hours each year because it's in your storage room and you prefer not to go there. But you want to look at replacing the lights that you use for several hours each day. Now, when you look at buying new CFL or LED light bulbs, on the packages, they usually account, they give energy savings. And this accounts for a light bulb being used for 3 hours each day at a cost of 12 cents per kilowatt hour. And this also accounts for the cost of replacing a comparison incandescent light bulb over the life of the LED or CFL bulb. So they take the average life of an incandescent, say it's going to last only 3,000 hours. Meanwhile, you have this LED bulb that's going to last 12,000 hours. And so it includes the cost of replacing the incandescent bulb three times in there. So that's what goes into the packaging on these newer bulbs when it talks about energy saving. Those are the standard numbers, I believe, that they use. That might not be the same on every package, but often that's what they're using. So take that into account. So when you look at those energy savings, that's comparing it to an incandescent bulb. Now, when you're looking at an LED, that's not, these numbers aren't comparing it to a CFL, but it's comparing it to an incandescent bulb. And it's also including the cost of replacing the incandescent bulb compared to not needing to replace the LED bulb. And that's, I think, the important thing to take into account, that energy saving is for 3 hours each day. So if you use it for 5 minutes a day, you're going to save a lot less. But if it's a bulb you're using for 6, 9, 12 hours a day, then that's going to have a much more of a financial savings to you and an energy savings as well through using that bulb than what's printed on the package. So another thing you can do is use a programmable thermostat, or just adjust your current thermostat to reduce your heating and cooling loads at night or when no one is home. Now, that's a great way to save a little bit of energy. Even just in the wintertime, just reducing your thermostat setting a couple degrees overnight for the course of winter can result in saving a lot of energy. It's pretty good. And that does not cost you any more. If you want to do it yourself, or if you already have a programmable thermostat, use it. Figure out how to program it and do that. And there's some awesome thermostats out there right now that make it really easy, and they kind of learn to do what you want them to do quite easily. So there's the Nest thermostat and the Ecobee thermostat. So awesome solutions out there. Those are just a couple things you can do. I've only discussed lighting and adjusting your thermostat, and I have many more simple solutions that you can do in an existing home. But you know what? I'm doing an episode solely for that, and it's going to be the next episode, episode 5. So stay tuned for that. I'm going to give you many simple solutions that you can do, simple and cheap solutions you can do to save energy in your home. So stay tuned for that. So how can you make your home more environmentally friendly? We've discussed how your home can be damaging to the environment. We've discussed energy usage in your home and what you can do to reduce that, and how you can determine how materials might affect the environment. But what can you do when it comes down to, how can we summarize this? What are things you can do to make your home more environmentally friendly? Well, first, you can use sustainable materials that have a low embodied energy, no harmful contents, or as few harmful contents as possible, and have a minimal waste, and also optimally have a recyclable waste. So any waste can be recycled and reused somewhere else without just having to go into a landfill. Now, secondly, you can design your home to use standard material sizes to reduce waste. If you look at sheet goods out there like plywood and drywall or gypsum board or whatever you, gyp rock, a lot of different terms for drywall out there. Those come in standard 4x8 sheets. And also with drywall, it comes in 10-foot and 12-foot lengths as well. But design your home to consider for that. And so there's a lot less offcuts. Now, another alternative to that is to have, instead of a site-built home, you can have your home manufactured in a factory. Now, factories can be optimized to use a lot less waste due to that setting and being able to have a lot more control over things and be a lot more organized. They can have a lot less waste from the construction of your home. And also different building systems can be used, which they assemble your, construct your home in panels in a factory and then just quickly assemble on site. And that also has a minimal factory waste. And in those cases, both of these cases, whether your home's entirely manufactured in a factory or just pre-assembled in a factory, there's minimal to no site waste in either of those options. So next, thirdly, look at your energy use. If you're designing a new home or a major renovation, look for ways that you can reduce your energy requirements. Spending a bit more time on insulation and energy efficiency during the construction of your home is often much more cost-effective than to attempt to improve the energy efficiency of an existing home. You want to consider renewable resources of heat or electricity, but first, look at how you can reduce the energy you will need, as this will be much more cost-effective. Now, if you're in an existing home, look at the things that you use the most and the largest energy consumers in your home, and determine ways that you can make those things more efficient, either by replacing them with more efficient items, using more efficient light bulbs or more efficient fridge, or look at how you can change your energy use or your use of those materials to save energy in that way. You can change your habits too. You don't have to change materials. That's not the only solution, but you can change the way you're using things to save energy and become more environmentally sustainable yourself through your living habits. So finally, stay tuned for episode 5, where I'm going to be discussing many simple and cheap ways that you can improve the energy efficiency of your home. I hope you have enjoyed this episode, and I hope it has given you ideas as to how you can make your home more environmentally sustainable. The show notes can be found at shcatalyst.com/004. If you have any thoughts or questions, please leave a comment at the end of that post. Now, if you have found this episode valuable and has provided you some awesome information, and you also know someone who you think would be interested in learning this, please share this episode with them, whether you share the link from your podcast app or shoot them an email with the link to the show notes. Either way, just share the love, share the information around. Finally, if you want to get these episodes as soon as they're released, click subscribe in your podcast listening app, or you can also go to shcatalyst.com/subscribe, and that gives links to the different, some of the main podcast listening apps out there, so you can subscribe easily in those. Thanks so much for your time today. Thanks for taking the time to listen to this episode. I hope it has given you some ideas how you can move forward. And until next time, go do something to make your home a little more sustainable.